session number 21294, Reel 2.
Cliff, Reel 2.
Yeah, the seaman branch were kept aboard, and not a lot to do, only cleaning and general routine, not port routine. And of course, we were able to go ashore 3 nights out of 4. So Cape Town was 20 miles away, but there was a train from Simonstown to Cape Town along the coast, and so we spent a lot of time in Cape Town. They did organise a leave for us in sections. We went on leave. And we were sent out to people in South Africa who were prepared to accept servicemen on leave. And it was very good. Very good to us. So anyway, we were there for 5 months, and then when we left Cape Town, again, after 2 days, destination Freetown. So we thought, oh, that's okay, we're going back home. Because something else, obviously, had to go to do the job that we were going to do. And so we got to Freetown. A short stay there, and on again. Obviously thinking we were still going, heading back home, but after leaving Freetown, the destination became Gibraltar, which wasn't the way we'd gone down. So, we were in company with 2 troop ships who we knew were going home, but a few days out of Freetown, we parted company with these troop ships. They went one way. We carried on with the Vindictive, which was another depot ship. And we had 3 destroyer escorts. Partly, partway to Gibraltar, one of the escorts was decoyed away. They got a ping on the Asdic and went out to investigate this submarine, U-boat. And while that destroyer was away, we ran into other U-boats. And this is when we got torpedoed. And it happened that about 11:15 at night time, and it took 2 hours to sink, but it took 5 torpedoes to sink it. Meanwhile, Venomous, the 2 destroyers, we were left with 2 destroyers, and they were circling round chasing U-boats. But after the first torpedo hit our engine room, in fact there was 2 at once, and of course they stopped us, we couldn't move, and we were just a sitting target for the rest. Meanwhile the 2 destroyers were chasing around, but when Hecla sank. They were picking up survivors. But it took a long time. It went on all night and all the next day. And one of the destroyers that was trying to get alongside, but Hecla before it sank, also got torpedoed. That was the Marne. And it didn't sink, but the stern was blown away. And the Marne had already picked up 60-odd survivors. So there was quite a few lost again then. But I got off by our action stations. The duties we had to carry out at action stations and abandoned ship stations was to release the Cali floats and lower the whalers. And so after doing that, it was a matter of getting into the water, and of course the ship had a big list on, so the only way I could get down was to, we lowered the whaler down, and when they released it onto the water, it turned over and smashed alongside. But I slid down the rope that we'd, the falls that we'd lowered the whaler on, and dropped in. But I dropped in the wreckage of this, I mean, whaler, didn't I? Anyway, I got away. Swung out towards a Cali float. And this Cali float, with others, was drifting down the side of the ship. We came through a big hole, which one of the torpedoes had made. And the Cali float drifted into this hole and out again. And then it was vastly overloaded, you know. We could only support about 20 these Cali floats, and there must have been at least 30 on this one. Of course, during the night we were just drifting away, and the ship had gone. And the destroyers were circling around, but wouldn't stop because of the U-boats. And so during the night, there was a big swell on. Most of the time we were down in the trough of the waves, and now and again, we went up on a wave, and when we went up on a wave, we could see for miles round, and there was nothing but floats, Cali floats and things. No sign of any ships. But during the night, one had come up to us three times and thrown a line, which we missed. And of course, away it went, it wouldn't stop. And after the third time, we thought we'd had it, you know. It became daylight, of course, and there was nothing, no ships in sight. But eventually, they found us. But it was well into the next afternoon. And this was the Venomous that picked me up. And it was running short of fuel. So I had to put into the nearest port, which was Casablanca. And Casablanca had just been bombarded and taken over by the American fleet So it was Vichy French at the time. And on the way there, I believe Venomous got a signal from the Admiralty, on no account put into Casablanca. What the reply was, I don't know, but we didn't, we had no option. We just got into Casablanca with about half an hour's fuel left. And got alongside the an American cruiser there, the Augusta. And everybody went aboard this Augusta, and they refueled the Venomous. But the Augusta people dished out some clothing, you know, and because the Venomous must have had about 400 survivors on board, and I missed all the freebies because I had to go down the sick bay. I had a hole in my leg, and
how would you got that?
How I got it, I think, is when I dropped into the wreckage of this whaler. I mean, dropping off the rock, and it was burned too. There was a rope burn. Sliding down the rock caused a burn as well. So I went. I didn't know anything about it until it'd been picked up. But anyway, when I got onto this American cruiser, went down the sick bay, and they doctored it up, put me in a straight jacket, and got me back on the Venomous, and off we went to Gibraltar. And at Gibraltar, I was taken to an army hospital up in the hills. And as we pulled alongside at Gibraltar, the air raid sirens went. And there was two ambulances waiting for the likes of me who had to go to hospital. And so we were transferred to these ambulances and away up to this hospital during an air raid, which was really hair-raising because the barrage there was out of this world. Anyway, I got to this hospital and I was there for a month, and they put me on a chicken diet to build up this flesh wound, this hole in my leg. And sure enough, in that time, this flesh had filled right up and way over the top. So they had to burn it down again with a solution of lime. Anyway, after
what
a month...
What was that treatment like?
Well, it was just a piece of gauze soaked in this solution of lime and put on to burn this flesh down. It was okay, but after a month, they got word from the dockyard that they'd got passage for me to go home, see. And when I got down to the dockyard, just in Gibraltar, they couldn't let me go on this. It was only a frigate or something. It didn't have any medical people aboard, so I couldn't go. So I had to wait for other suitable transport. And in the few days I was waiting, I had to go to the naval sick bay in Gibraltar for these dressings, you see. And instead of putting a small piece of gauze on my leg, on this thing, they were putting a blooming great piece like handkerchiefs. And of course it burns all the skin off my leg. Anyway, they had to get in touch with this army hospital eventually because it wasn't going very good. And so I had to go back to this hospital. And Major Fairbanks there, the medical officer, he blew his top. And they'd all done in a couple of days what he'd done in a month, you see. Anyway, he said, you certainly won't be going down there again. So after another month, I came home on a hospital ship, direct from the army hospital down to the hospital ship and back home. Took a fortnight to get back to Liverpool.
Before we carry on, can you tell me what you were doing when the Heckel was torpedoed? Can you take me through your own personal experiences?
What I was doing, actually, I was due to go on a middle watch. So instead of going down to my hammock, down to the mess deck, I got my head down on the quarter deck. So I was up on deck when the first torpedo hit. And of course, action stations was the order of the day, and I had to get from the quarter deck to the forecastle where my gun was. And so I got up there and was there till we abandoned the ship.
What was it like waiting for the abandoned ship?
Well, we didn't really get an order, because the time I was out of action, and there was no. It was just a matter of somebody going around shouting about the ship, you see. I don't remember getting the order to abandon the ship, but that was the ongoing thing. Everybody was going, so the ship was well over on its side at the time.
And it was being hit by torpedoes?
Yeah, it took five. Of course, you didn't know where they were coming, you know. The first two at the engine room area, and that was fatal. But then they were coming all over the place.
How frightening was it waiting for the torpedoes to hit?
Well, of course, we didn't know there'd be another one, you know. So that was it after the first one, but obviously they were very keen to sink this ship, but actually the U-boat commander didn't know it was a Heckler. They thought it was a big cruiser. I don't know. I suppose they were very pleased that it was a Heckler at the end of the day.
And the date of this?
The date was the 11th of November, on the night of the 11th, 12th of November.
So you said you returned to England. Can you pick up your story when you returned to England, please?
Yes, I got back to Liverpool, went in hospital there for a week, and then was transferred back to Drake again, the depot. See, in between ships, you go back to your depot. And so I got about 3 weeks leave when I got back to depot, 3 weeks leave back home. And I was determined I wasn't going on any more ships. But when I got back to barracks after my leave, I was drafted out to a naval air station near Warrington. Black Cap at Stretton, RNAS Stretton, which of course was my hometown. And I had a nice job there as postman for 9 months. And was recalled to depot, Plymouth, for draft.
Had you used any influence to get this nice job?
No. As a matter of fact, there was two of us went together on this draft and reported to the Master of Arms there. And in his usual grumpy voice, where do you come from? This other lad was from St. Helens. Where do you come from? Warrington. Right, well, he said, I want a postman. He said, you'd better do that. Because I was local, I got a postman's job, which was a piece of cake, really. But it was a special duty because I had to be there at 7 o'clock in the morning to meet the mail van. I had to sort all the mail, dish it all out, and then collect mail and see it. We had 2 mails a day, you see. But the last one was around 5-ish, between 4 and 5. So that I wasn't in a duty watch where you're on one day and off the next.
Were you delivering to servicemen?
Pardon?
Were you delivering to servicemen?
Oh, yes, all the officers and the messes on the camp. Yeah. So, being a special duty, it meant that I could go home every night when I'd finished. But I didn't finish very early, say, about 6 o'clock. So, as a special duty, I could just hand my card in and go till the next morning. But I had to be back at 7 o'clock next morning, which I did by push bike, about 6 miles, but okay. So after 9 months of that, of course, I'd forgotten about the horrors of this heckler business. And when I got back to barracks, I found I was in this big draft that was going out. And I found that my pal was on the same draft, my heckler pal. Of course, you didn't know where all these drafts were, just numbers. You didn't know where you were going or anything. But I found that he was on the same draft, so I was very pleased about that. And so we got on the train in Plymouth Barracks. They had their own side in there. And we got off Greenock again. This was the same same sort of thing when I joined Heckler. But this time, we were ferried out to another ship in the middle of the Clyde, and it was the Queen Elizabeth, which was being used as a trooper. And we were ferried out to America, New York, and we were on the way to Vancouver. But we had to wait for a fortnight in New York. So they put us in an American naval depot, which was two big hotels, commandeered HMS Asprey, and we were there for 2 weeks, just waiting for this, till they were ready for us at Vancouver. And then we got on the train in New York, and we were 5 days later, we got off in Vancouver.
What was it like in America in those days?
Oh, it was very peaceful, really. There was, you know, they didn't know there was a war on, really. This pal of mine had a relative in New York, a cousin or somebody. We went and found, dug him out, and he was supposed to show us around New York, but we finished up with showing him around. He had no clue. But anyway, it was very hectic, but it was a good experience. And then when we got to Vancouver, we joined this escort carrier, the Shah, which they were building in Canada. America and Canada were building they were converting merchant ships and liners into carriers by stripping off the upper structure and putting a flight deck on. And they called them Woolworths carriers. And this was HMS Shah. So after doing trials down there for a week or two, we left for San Francisco.
What was it like aboard this ship?
Well, it was very spacious until you got down to the mess deck. And then it was like a submarine down there. You know, because they'd taken all the upper deck off to put on the hangar and the flight deck. So it was, there was plenty of room except in the mess deck. I don't know, it's something we had to get used to. Up and down these blowing great ladders, you know. Anyway, all these escort carriers that were being built there were coming over to the Clyde to have something fitted to the engine room, some sort of a ball race. I don't know whether it must have been a patent over here, but it was these carriers were coming back to the Clyde to have this ball race fitted. But in our case, we didn't. They reckon that our captain volunteered for this job. But we went to San Francisco and we loaded up with planes, hangar and flight deck, nose to tail. And we ferried these planes out to India, Cochin, via Australia. And when we got there, Cochin, we unloaded these planes, because there was an air base there, naval air station. We unloaded all these planes except for one squadron, which was kept on board, and that was our squadron. And the squadron people came and joined us,